we welcome our speaker tonight. It's Andrew from Feet First Speakers Group.
I'm Andrew. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Andrew.
It's an honor to speak here. This actually isn't my home group anymore, but that's okay. I joined the new group a couple weeks ago. The XJ Walkers group on Trumbauersville Road, big book meeting. I'm not really nervous because I don't know why, but I'm not prepared, so. What it was like and what happened and what it's like now, my sobriety date is June 21st, 2019. So, God willing, I'll have 3 years here next month. Longest time I've ever had. You know, I'm the type of person that couldn't go a day. I got a cold too right now, so excuse me. I got a sponsor. He's here, Mikey T. You know, I got a tight circle of alcoholics that I talk to daily. So what it was like is I grew up not far from here. I grew up in Nazareth, like half hour north of here. Good childhood, no crazy trauma or nothing like that made me an alcoholic. Everything was good. And, you know, life was good, and I had everything I wanted growing up. Basketball was pretty much my life growing up. Played basketball since I was a kid, you know, got home and would just play basketball. My parents got divorced. I don't really remember what age I was, probably like 10 or something. And, it didn't really affect me at the time. You know, my dad was the cool dad and my mom just had to work all the time. So, you know, they let me choose. I believe they let me choose where I wanted to go for the most part. But I went with my mom. I was a mama's boy and we lived, in a crappy little apartment. And we were on food stamps and, you know, it was a struggle, but my mom worked hard. She was at work every day. But, yeah, we were on food stamps, the old food stamps that were actually like the little fake dollars and stuff. So that was always embarrassing at the food store. But other than that, I really didn't get into any trouble. Just still played basketball, ran around. Sometime, like maybe 13 years old or something, I don't know, I like kind of started rebelling. Like I was a good kid and then all of a sudden I was like smoking cigarettes and, you know, maybe trying some other stuff. But at some point my mom met a guy and got married. So we got to move out of that apartment. We moved into a nice house and everything was good. A big revelation I've had since I got sober is we moved, but I still used my dad's address in my old school district, so I didn't have to switch schools. Cause I was extremely feared up about changing schools and being the new kid and all that. No one wants to be the new kid. And, I guess in my own mind, I was the best basketball player in the world. I probably had a girlfriend already. I was like popular, you know. So going to a new school was not in my future. But I got caught. a lady filmed my mom taking me to school and told on me. And one day, in 10th grade, I got called to the office and was told to go clear out my locker. They knew I didn't live in that school district anymore and I got caught, whatever. So, once again, at the time, I don't even know if I made a big deal out of it at the time, like that day or anything, but all of a sudden I had to go to a new school, and boom, from that day, I was different. I'll never forget getting introduced in the school, like, hey, there's a new kid, here's Andrew. And I immediately just shelled up and became a different kid. I would take the bus to school and not go into school and just walk around and get into trouble, and met a few kids who were getting into trouble, and I was doing some crazy stuff at, 14, 15 years old, breaking into houses just because, and just doing dumb stuff. So, obviously with that came drugs and alcohol. Skipping school, rebelling, meeting the kids that were partying, basketball. I didn't really care about basketball anymore. I think I kept trying to play and, it just didn't work out. It wasn't the most important thing anymore. Another thing that I found out, since being clean is I was immediately an alcoholic. I'll try not to reference drugs, but I remember clearly being 14 in the back of people's car, rolling up a joint or something, and I was stashing some of their marijuana for myself for the morning. I was immediately a scumbag. Drinking, I was immediately trying to, I was the one who figured it all out. Like I knew who could get it for us. I knew I would come up with the money, that was my goal. That was my goal every day, is to come up with 10 bucks. doing that for so long, everyone still thought I was a good kid. I remember my mom, I remember getting into some trouble. Like I had a friend sleep over one night and he like stashed a bunch of stuff in my closet. And my mom went to like make him a bed or something for the night, and stuff fell out of my closet and like it blew my cover. My mom knew I wasn't a good kid no more. But my stepfather told my mom, if me or my sister ever brings anything into his house type of deal, we gotta go. So my mom immediately, if she's on Zoom, I hope I'm telling the story correctly, but my mom immediately would cover for me. If she found anything, she wasn't telling him. Or if I would come home drunk or stoned, she would be like, go to your room, what kind of food do you want? And that was that. So I never really had any consequences. My dad is a special guy, man. He has never, disciplined me once in my life. So that was the thing too. I would just go to my dad's. If stuff was getting bad, I would just go to my dad's. Fast forward, to the end of high school, I was addicted. I was an alcoholic. I needed something in me every day before I even graduated high school. I didn't have a job, so I was scheming. I was stealing. I was scheming. Like I said, if I could get 10 bucks a day, I was good. And I would do stuff before school. I would do stuff during school. I would get called to the office for throwing up and weird stuff in school. And I was full blown from 14 years old. I was just, it set something off in me that I now know is alcoholism. But back then I didn't know what it was. But so I graduated high school. Somehow I graduated in 2006. 2007, I was in jail. Caught multiple felonies, multiple misdemeanors, wrecked a car, had stuff on me, broke into a house, had stuff on me, broke into a business, had stuff on me. And pretty much blacked out for the last time. I was out on bail and did another burglary and was blacked out and woke up in jail like, what is going on? I had to read my paperwork in jail to find out what I actually did, because I really didn't remember. I slept for a couple of days in jail straight before really even like figuring out what was going on. So I finally had some consequences for my actions, basically, because I never had any growing up. I had already, you know, I had already overdosed by then. My cover was blown by then. You know, that stepdad who never knew anything bad, he knew. I my mom had to come to the hospital in the middle of the night for me overdosing, or I got arrested a couple times for little stuff by then, so he kept his word. I couldn't go back there. But anyway, I'm in jail. I got felonies. I got misdemeanors. And I don't know what's going on. It's a side of life that I've never seen. But I was already a schemer, and, you know, people like to say, like, a chameleon. I could blend in everywhere. I could hang out with whoever anywhere and fit in. And people usually like me. So I go to court, and I got a public defender, and he tells me, you know, you're gonna go home. I think I sat there for like 6 months before going to court. And my public defender tells me I'm going home. He pretty much made a deal with the judge and blah blah blah. And I go to my sentencing, and I get a state sentence, and I go upstate. It was a very weird sequence, very quick. You know, being sentenced is like nerve-wracking as it is. And then I was told I was going to go home, and I'm just standing up there next to my public defender, and she tells me I'm going upstate for 1 to 3 years, and I kind of look at him like, hey, dude, aren't you going to say something? And he kind of looks at me like, sorry. And my family was back in the courtroom crying, and I was just like, oh, my God. So I go to state prison at 18 years old, and pretty much wasn't no, not to say it wasn't no big deal, but I mean, I just, what are you supposed to do? I just did it. I could fit in. I played basketball all day. I worked out. My mother was sending me money. I had food, you know, never got into trouble. So I would go to what they call like the honor block, where you're never really locked in. And play ping pong all day and eat food. Makes it sound okay, but it's not really okay. So I would get out on parole after doing like 19 or 20 months, I think. And I went to a place called the Keenan House in Allentown for 90 days. And I had to do that before I could actually go home. But the problem was I didn't really have anywhere to go. I couldn't go home, but I could go to my dad's, like I always did. So I do the Keenan House, which is 90 days, not the funnest rehab to go to. And I move up to my dad's in the Poconos after 90 days. So I say all that to say, you know, I had almost 2 years clean, not by my own choice, but I had almost 2 years clean, and I go up to my dad's in the middle of the woods where there's more deer than people, and I find what I want within a week. And it was on from there. I immediately, you know, I had a state parole officer who wanted to see me like once every, I don't know, 3 months. So, yeah. So now I'm in the Poconos, where no one knows me, and my dad thinks I'm doing good, and my stepmother thinks I'm doing good, and I'm not doing good at all. And I would come down here and wreak havoc and go back up there and bounce back and forth. So I would eventually, I'm not trying a war story, I'm sorry, but so I would eventually go back to jail, obviously, and finish out my time in state prison. And I would come out, and I would do the same thing. Ruin my life, ruin everyone in my life. And, it didn't take long for me to keep going back to jail. I think I got like over 7 years in jail in my life. I don't know how many rehabs, but that became the pattern in my life. I would eventually be homeless in Allentown. I would be homeless in Easton. I would be homeless in Nazareth, where nobody's homeless. Begging my mom to come sleep there, and she would tell me no. Breaking her heart, breaking my heart. You know, and the story stays the same, right? If I can find $10 a day, I'm good. $10 is, I'm good. $20 is a good day. And that was it. Never worked. Stealing, scheming, breaking into houses. All that. So jail would, you know, jail keeps coming with that life. And eventually I got to a point where, I got to a point in like 2015 or 16 where I kind of had enough and I was willing to do something new. And I moved to Lansdale in a recovery house. And it was pretty much the first time outside of jail where I had like 90 days or maybe even a little longer. And I got a sponsor and I think we made it to like step three. And I had like some money and I had a job and all that was new to me. And my mom called me one day and said that the constable or the police or something were at there came to her house with a warrant for an old charge from years ago. And I was, you know, that's all it took for me to give up everything I had going. You know, I immediately called someone and said, "Come get me. I got some money. Let's do what we used to do." And that was it. I threw that right out. It was a driving under a DUI suspension without a license, which I had already done time for a few times, and it's mandatory time in Pennsylvania if you're out on a DUI and you drive without your license. But I guess I shouldn't say that because it's not definite time. So when I went to court, when they actually caught me, she told me if I would have just came that day, she wasn't going to lock me up. So I threw everything away just being an alcoholic, really. Looking for a reason to keep running. So after that, I had to do 90 days for that. And I got out with... I got out and went to a recovery house and ruined that within a week in Allentown. And I was homeless in Allentown. And it was pretty much the worst time of my life. I was legitimately homeless, meaning not a dollar, not a cell phone. I slept on the inside of this bush for a couple nights. I like cleared out the inside of this bush and slept inside this bush. And I'll never forget, I think about being homeless all the time. And I'll never forget just like being cold at night. Like it can be warm during the day and you think you're good, but it's cold at night. And shit like that. So that pretty much, I mean, I don't want to say rock bottom because that wasn't the last time I drank, but it did a number on me to not have anyone to call, to not have a phone to call anyone on, you know, to not have nothing. So I went to rehab and, I was in rehab. And I met a good friend of mine, a good friend of a lot of people here, probably Jim C. Jim C. recently passed away, but he was my counselor in rehab. And by then I had played the rehab game already. You know, I knew I would go to rehab and they would cover me for 21 or 28 days and I would have to figure out something by then. But Jim C. also was a guy who played the rehab game in his life. So... Like two, maybe 3 weeks go by, and Jim C. was my counselor, you know, and if anyone's ever been to rehab, you know, you meet with your counselor a few times, you figure out, you know, you do some work, you figure out what's wrong, you figure out where you're gonna go. So like 3 weeks go by, and this dude hasn't called me to his office, and eventually I go up to his office, and I'm like, hey man, like, I know I'm gonna have to leave here in a few days, and we haven't even met once. And he's like, I know. What are you going to do? And I was like, oh, man. And he basically called me out of my bullshit. Excuse me for cursing. He called me out of my stuff and said, because I was already at that rehab specifically twice before then. And I don't know what else he could see in my past, but he said, I see your stuff. You run the rehabs when you're out of options, you get out and you'll be back in a little bit if you don't die. He's like, is that what you're going to do again? You know, it's time for you to figure something out for your own recovery. You know, what am I going to tell you? And, I kind of had a little moment, you know, like, oh man, he's right. At that point, I don't do anything for myself. I do what I'm told. Jail kind of had me in this like mentality, like I do what I'm told. I was very institutionalized, kind of, you know. People figure stuff out for me and I'll go do it to the best of my ability. So that was crazy. I had a little moment with Jim C, and I would get out and I didn't have nowhere to go. And my mom wasn't paying for another recovery house because she already paid for 10. And she found a woman in Quakertown who would help me get into a recovery house. And my days were counting down in this rehab, and like I believe she couldn't find a bed in a house for me. So she said, you can come live in my house. So I was like, okay. I didn't really know what it would be like, but I was pretty much for the first time, I would say I was willing to do whatever. I was willing to do whatever to not be homeless again in Allentown. So I went there. I moved right up the street here and stayed in the room with someone who was also sober and met another kid here who came there my second day and was like, yo man, I heard about your situation. I've been in your situation and I'm willing to show you a way to get out. And I was just, you know, AA, that's what AA is all about, right? Kid walks in my room and says, I can show you a way out. And I was like, let's do it. And for the first time in my life, I went through the steps and did an honest fourth step. You know, I told him stuff I've never told anybody. I don't know if I did an honest first step because I drank again, but I did the steps to the best of my ability up to step 9. I got to step 9. I think I had like a year sober. For the first time in my life, I had a job that I went to every day. I lost my license in 2006. I got it back. You know, it was 10 years. It was, I forget what, the years are all messed up in my head. But I didn't have it for 10 years. All of a sudden I got my license back with the help of alcoholics taking me to these meetings I had to go to that weren't close, lending me money to pay my fines off to get my license. You know, I couldn't have done it on my own. My family wasn't running to Quakertown to run me up there to a class, to run me back, to lend me money. I was done with them, but people here seen that I might have a shot, and I'll never take that for granted. So I get my license, I get a truck, I have a job, I find a girlfriend, and I got all this stuff, and life is good, and I made the rookie mistake of falling back on AA. This was my home group. This was my home group from, I think, the week I moved to Quakertown. But all of a sudden, you know, I wasn't doing nothing for my recovery. Like I said, I got to step 9. I can't even tell you if I made an amends. AA wasn't first anymore. I don't really know what was, but it wasn't AA. You know, I would come here every Monday just to show face, but AA wasn't the most important thing. I don't really know what it was. I don't know. Me, my ego, I got a truck now and a girlfriend and a job and a bank account for the first time in my life. So anyway, I would basically overdose again in Coopersburg. And I was using and drinking towards the end of that little stint in sobriety and trying to hide it in a house full of alcoholics and a girlfriend who's an alcoholic and thinking I'm slick. And, you know, one day my memory is shot. One day they called me out on my stuff, or I admitted my stuff. I don't remember. But anyway, I went to rehab for the last time. I went to the Penn Foundation, and for the first time, you know, I've been to many rehabs. For the first time, I got out of rehab, but people seen enough good in me in that year before to where I didn't come out with nothing. You know, I got to move back into the same house. The girlfriend stayed. The job stayed. And I had a fair shot out of rehab. I want to say, fast forward another year, I do the same thing. I make the same mistake. I stayed sober for another year, about. And, I stayed sober for another year, and one day, out of nowhere, I made a bad decision, and for the last time, hit another bottom. I was still here. I did some scumbag stuff, man. I went and spoke at the Penn Foundation while I was drinking, claiming I was sober. I seen everyone here, you know, telling them I was sober. I got a year. Everyone thought I had a year. And I was at the lowest point I almost ever been at, inside. Something happened, you know, I guess like people say, AA ruined their drinking. It was pretty much like I felt so guilty about lying to everyone here, lying to my girlfriend, lying to people who cared about me that thought I had a year and I was doing great, and inside I was dying. And it was pretty much, I'm repeating myself, but it was pretty much the lowest I've ever been. So, one day, my life was about to crumble into pieces, and I called my sponsor, and I said, yo, I gotta talk to you, like, today. Because I've been messing up, and my life's about to crumble. So, I went and talked to my sponsor, and thank God for AA. I pretty much cried like a little baby to my sponsor, and he was just like, dude, we just got to start over. You know, getting honest again sucks, but I wouldn't be here if I didn't get honest again. Starting over sucks. Admitting that I've been lying to everybody sucks, but without it, I mean, you're not going to last, you know? So that's what I did on June 21st of 2019. I got sober that day. That was the day before was the last day I drank. And hit the steps again. Made AA my first priority again. And life took off again. Since then, life has been crazy. I guess I'll talk about the steps though a little bit. What time is it? I believe that I had a true step one experience that day that I called my sponsor. Not like I had some white light seeing Jesus, but I can tell you since that day, I truthfully have not, other than maybe, I think it would be really cool to be able to go into a store and buy weed. Other than that, I have not thought about actually putting something into action and going to get any form of alcohol. And that's why I believe like something just clicked. I can't do one of anything. I can't take one hit of weed. I will, you know, my dad used to call me, he literally used to call me a weedaholic. Because if I take a hit of weed, I will smoke it before work, on my lunch break, when I get out, before dinner, before bed. It's just how I'm wired. It doesn't matter what it is. And so I believe I had a true step one experience. I never had any type of higher power in my life. I grew up, you know, when I had to switch schools, that's another thing I can talk about. When I did step work with my first sponsor, I just really realized I had a big resentment at the world, the government, the police. The lady that followed me and I got in trouble, I had to switch schools. I just thought that ruined my life. Reality is I was breaking the law. You can't do that. You gotta go to the school that you live in that district. and here I am blaming everyone but myself. You know, that public defender that told me I was getting out, I had some bad plans in place for that guy. You know, I was gonna mess that dude up if I ever seen him or maybe even search him out. Reality is I went to jail with felonies and misdemeanors at 18. And I mean, was he a shitty public defender? Yeah. He told me I was gonna get out and I didn't, but reality is I went to jail with a bunch of charges that if they want to, they can send you away for many years. But the first time I hit the steps, it was like maybe the first time I ever had a clear mind where I took a look at myself. And, you know, that's what it's all about. And where I started that was, for the first time in my life, I had some sense of a higher power. I'll never forget reading We Agnostics for the first time. You know, I never had a higher power. I thought, you know, some of my family were big time Christians and I thought they were loony. You know, I grew up, like I said, I grew up a little rebel. I didn't believe in anything. We would pray every day. The first house I moved to, we would pray every day. We would pray every day in the next house I was in and something just clicked. And, for a while I battled with I didn't have an actual, a name or even a great concept for my higher power, but it doesn't matter. I still don't, you know, I still really don't, but I just believe that, you know, there is something out there that, that makes all this go round. And I'm a big believer in karma. You know. So, what it's like now is I have a life beyond my wildest dreams, times a million. You know, I'm a guy who wrote anything good happening to me. I wrote that off a long time ago. I grew up in a good family, in a good area, and ended up under a bridge with not good people. So I wrote off kids, getting married, owning a house. I wrote all that off like that. And if it would happen, it would take how many years so I get my act together. But, you know, I'm a big advocate for letting newcomers know, it does not even take that long to get your life together. I don't have 3 years yet. I'll have 3 months next month, 3 years next month. And me and my wife bought a house. I got married. We have a beautiful daughter. I forgot to mention that I had a son back in 2011. And, man, I'm bad with years. I don't even know if that's right. That's terrible. Whatever. So I had a boy with a girl that is, not the greatest girl. She suffers from this too, and she's actually in jail for a long time right now. But I finished my state sentence back in 2011. And I got a girl pregnant that I just met at a bar, you know. And couldn't stay out of jail. So I talked to this kid through jail phones growing up. You know, he didn't know who I was. And when I was out, I wasn't a dad. That's for sure. So the past 3 years has been, pretty amazing building a relationship with this little kid who 3 years ago, I would go pick him up and I was lucky if we had, a half hour of a conversation in the whole weekend. And now he calls me when he has his phone on. He has a phone that I can't ever get a hold of him on, which is annoying. But he calls me a couple months ago. He got really scared about something and called me for help. That's a shitty way to feel good, but it made me feel good. You know, this kid trusts me. This, you know, he. I asked him to come live with me. He said, "Not right now." So I was like, "All right, man. Well, if you ever want to, you can." Because, like I said, his mom's in jail, so he lives with her parents, who are not the greatest people in my opinion, but extremely grateful for them because they took care of him for years and years when me and his mother could not. But so I built this relationship with this little boy who comes to my house, and he is he's not little anymore, and he's a little socially behind, I would say. And I think it's just because of living with them. You know, he don't know how to ride a bike yet. Stuff like that. It's just weird little stuff. So it's testing me to teach this kid how to ride a bike and trying to get him to eat healthy. You know, he'll come to my house and wake up and say, can you give me a Hershey's bar? And I'm like, no. And his grandparents will give him a Hershey's bar for dinner. So that's a struggle. But anyway, I got married, I got a daughter, I got a house, I got a good job, I got a bank account, I got stuff that I never thought I would have. I keep my word, the stuff that really matters, I keep my word. You can trust me. You know, all the emotional stuff I wrote off years ago, you couldn't trust me. You couldn't have me around. I would steal all your stuff and help you look for it. You know, it's that stuff that really matters. Being a good dad, being a good husband, being a good employee, being a good AA member. I haven't been, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm the perfect AA member. My biggest struggle nowadays is trying to find a balance in my life. AA has given me this beautiful life, and man, it's packed. You know, I go to work, I go pick up my daughter, I come home, I'm trying to lose weight, so I go to the gym. I get home from the gym, my daughter needs a bath, and we need to eat dinner, and boom, it's 8 o'clock. And I'm like, what the hell? So that's the biggest struggle right now, trying to make meetings, trying to help people. But I'll always make the best effort I can because, I mean, that's what people did for me. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for AA members that were willing to take time out of their busy days to get me started here. But that's really all I got. Thanks for letting me speak.